Lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Get the local view from the fine columnist for the Register Guard. See what he's up to. You can grab the sports section, or you could have a couple other options. RegisterGuard.com, DuckSports.com. On Twitter, it's at AustinMeekRG. Austin, always appreciate the check-in. How are things going?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Oh, just peachy. So the day after we talked last week, Oregon and defensive coordinator Jim Leavitt parted ways. I mean, you talk to the guys a lot, you cover the team, you get a feel, and I was just like, well, recruiting's over, jobs are taken. I figured this was their staff for 2019. I was really surprised. You wrote you weren't. What were you so aware of that you weren't shocked at all?
Well, I just felt like watching the dynamic between Mario Cristobal and Jim Leavitt last year, you could just see that those two guys didn't mesh. You know, you never saw them really together, interacting with each other. You know, their public comments about each other were very, very guarded, very reserved. There was just something there you could tell that they didn't get along. Now, I wasn't sure it was to the point that they would make a move this year. I thought maybe there was a chance that they would try to make it work again next year. But I certainly was not surprised to see Jim Leavitt moving on. And I went back to something that Mario Cristobal said to me last spring when I was talking to him about the fact that Jim Leavitt wanted the job that Mario Cristobal ultimately got. And that can be a weird dynamic when you've got two guys on the same staff who they both went after the same job, and now one of them is working for the other one. And I asked Mario Cristobal, you know, do you have to have a conversation with Jim Leavitt about any disappointment he might have about not getting the job? And Mario Cristobal basically said, no, I don't think I need to do that. Jim's a professional. And in this organization, there's only going to be one coach, one head coach. He understands that, and that's how it is. I just thought, boy, that doesn't sound like two guys that have hashed things out over a couple beers and are best buddies now. I don't think that those two guys ever really got on the same page.
Wow, interesting. You also know, you know, the salary he was making, and like you wrote in speaking with the athletic director, Rob Mullins, he seemed okay with where the defense was, but this buyout, you know, when he could have been let go before this year. So with what Cristobal said, I guess safe to say there's no way around this decision, good or bad, contingent on how the defense does, is going to be a pretty big chunk of how he gets evaluated as a head coach.
Yes, absolutely. This needs to work for Mario Cristobal. He needs to be right about this. If Keith Hayward is eventually named defensive coordinator, and we all think that's what's going to happen, then Keith Hayward needs to do at least as well as Jim Leavitt did. He probably needs to elevate this defense, because they're going to be more talented. They signed, everybody's talking about this top 10 recruiting class they signed, so they're going to be more talented on defense, and so the results need to be better, and if they're not, people are going to look at this move and say, well, why did you get rid of a guy and pay him up to $2.5 million to leave if your defense wasn't going to get better just because you couldn't get along with the guy, you know? So absolutely. Mario Cristobal, a big part of how he's going to be evaluated now is, does this move pan out? In the same way, I think that Mark Helfrich never really got it right at defensive coordinator after Nick Alioti retired. You know, I think if this doesn't pan out, it could have the same type of implication for Mario Cristobal. You don't spend this money to get rid of a guy who had performed pretty well in his job, unless you feel really strongly that the move is going to have a positive return.
Yeah, in the release, they sent out that now Oregon begins a national search. But in speaking with you and Aaron Fentress, everything I'm reading, I mean, how confident are you that they're not going outside the program? And it looks like it's going to be Keith Hayward as the new DC.
Yeah, I think they have to say that national search thing, partly because I think there's certain requirements when you fill a job like that. You can't just, you know, interview one candidate and say that's your search. And also, you know, I think just for the optics of it, it looks better to say we scoured the whole country and the very best candidate we could find was the guy who was right here, you know, versus saying, yeah, we didn't really bother to look. So I'm sure that, you know, I'm sure that they will do some homework. They'll look into some other candidates, but it'll be a huge upset if it's anybody but Keith Hayward, you know, partly just because of the timing. If they had really wanted to go get the very best defensive coordinator they could hire, the time to do that is not February. You know, if they really wanted to go out on the market, the time to be doing that is like December and January. So, you know, I don't think there's anybody out there that they're going to find right now who will be a better candidate than Keith Hayward. And I think it's just kind of a formality to go through the search process.
Talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard, let's get to the men's basketball team. Last week, I tried to provide the avenue for the Ducks to remain in the at-large picture. You weren't really buying it, but by the numbers, it was there. The finish to the Saturday game was really bad, so could we just ignore me now and make the statement, if you don't win the Pac-12 tournament, there ain't no big dance?
Steve, you tried your best. And I will admit that when Oregon had the lead in the first half of that Civil War, I thought, oh, gosh, I'm going to have to go on with Cannon next week. I'm going to have to say, you know what, Steve, you were right. They can still make it in as an at-large. And I think if they had won that game, you know, there would have been that argument to make that they at least had a path that they could do that. But I think now that path is officially gone. Their only hope now is to win the Pac-12 tournament. Otherwise, they're going to be in the NIT. And, I mean, it was tracking that way all along. The only way they were going to get an at-large was to get just ridiculously hot, which they had not really shown any ability to do over time. But, you know, mathematically it was possible for a while. I don't think it is anymore. I think even if they win the rest of their games in the regular season, they probably still need to win the Pac-12 tournament to get in.
You know, when Altman took the gig, you weren't here yet. And the program had slipped. They played in something called the CBI his first year, and they won it. And I'll tell you, he had an attitude of, this is awesome. I never want to be here again.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, if they finish okay, maybe win the game in the tournament, and they could get in the NIT, that's legit. But as snobby as it sounds, I mean, is this, you think this program would take, after what they've accomplished, play in a lesser tournament than the NIT?
I don't think that they would have any interest in that whatsoever. I mean, maybe the administration would make them do it. I don't, you know, financially, I don't know if there's a benefit to playing some more home games in one of those lower level tournaments. I mean, I think after you've been in the Final Four, you don't really want any part of that. So I think they'll have a decent case for the NIT unless they just tank it the rest of the way. So I expect that to be what happens. But if it really goes, I mean, to slip out of the NIT, I think they'd really have to struggle down the stretch. And at that point, I don't think anybody's going to want to see them play any more basketball.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. On the women's side, let's get to Friday. I mean, the Civil War at Matt Knight Arena, maybe it was some kind of foreshadowing what was to come last night. I mean, they might be used to what we witnessed in Knoxville or Storrs, but top 10 teams, packed arena. I mean, that place was rocking. Austin, how fantastic was that atmosphere?
Oh, it was tremendous. As good as it gets, as good as I've ever seen it at Matthew Knight Arena for any sporting event, men or women. It was spectacular. And last night at Gill was just as good. I think the tally was 21,665 fans who came through the turnstiles over those two nights to watch the Ducks and the Beavers. You know, you could probably go to some other places. You mentioned them, Tennessee, UConn, maybe the Texas schools where they really embrace women's basketball. But to have it happening at two schools, you know, this close together in this state, which population-wise is one of the smaller ones, it's just pretty unique, and it's pretty cool for the game of women's basketball. And, you know, as both coaches said, it's not going anywhere. These two programs are going to be knocking heads at a really high level, I think, for a long time.
That 21,665 attendance figures, I think that was the last 2 years of Paul Westhead, total.
Yeah, I bet you're right, if that, yeah.
You know, last night you saw the resilience of the Ducks, obviously losing Ruthie Hebert. I mean, they still almost knocked off a really good team. I mean, that was a night. Oregon State did a lot right. The Ducks did not, but let's just do a horrible hypothetical. If Hebert is gone for the season, I still think they could win the conference, maybe even make it a couple steps in the tournament, the big tournament. But I think that would kill the Final Four shot everybody is dreaming of, don't you? Or do you?
Well, I didn't go quite that far in my column today, although certainly it would affect their chances drastically. Aside from Sabrina Ionescu, there's nobody on that team who's more indispensable than Ruthie Hebert, and I think it's those two players together, you know, Ionescu and Hebert, that really makes the team what it is. The combination of having a guard who can do all the things that Sabrina can do, coupled with a post player who's so athletic and versatile like Hebert is, that's really what makes them go. So it's hard to see how they could make the Final Four if they don't have Ruthie. But I temper that just a little bit by saying they're still really talented. Even without Ruthie, they're still really good. They can still really shoot the ball. I could see them getting hot over a couple days in Portland. They're going to have a lot of things in their favor. If they close out the Pac-12, they still got a shot to get a one seed. You know, depending on what happens here down the stretch, obviously without Ruthie, it changes that too. You know, if you drop a game or two before the Pac-12 tournament and then you lose somewhere along the way in the Pac-12, that one seed is maybe not there anymore. So, you know, the path gets a lot more difficult as you sketch it out. But I'm not going to say it can't happen. You know, I remember that with Chris Boucher when Chris Boucher went down. And I remember writing, you know, hey, tough break, great season, no way they can make the Final Four now. And what'd they do? They ended up getting there. So it's still possible, but, boy, it sure gets a lot more difficult if Ruthie's not out there.
And lastly, I got to ask you about the big signing today. You know, there's still Bryce Harper out there, Dallas Keuchel, Manny Machado, 10-year, $300 million with San Diego. I just love this because even though I'm a fan, he didn't go to the Yankees or Red Sox or Dodgers. I mean, being a KC fan, it showed smaller dollar franchises can be attractive. What did you make of the news?
I just like to see a team trying. You know, I wish more teams were doing that. Like, the Padres are probably not going to win the World Series this year. They're not projected to win their division. They've been a team over the last few years that have shown a willingness to spend some money and go sign some free agents, even though maybe their top-to-bottom roster is not in position to be a contender. I like to see that. I wish more teams did that. You know, I wish more teams would say, okay, maybe we're not going to win the World Series, but we want to give a good product to our fans. We want to be competitive. So, we got the money. We'll go sign somebody. It seems like so many teams that are in the Padres position would say, nope, you know, we're not ready to win yet. We're not going to spend this money. We're going to bring up our prospects. We're going to pay them next to nothing, and then maybe, you know, if we make the playoffs a couple times, then we'll spend some money on a free agent when we think we can win the World Series. But that kind of all-or-nothing mentality is a big part of what we're seeing now with baseball, where there's just nothing in the middle. You know, there's a handful of teams that really try. There's a bunch of teams that want to tank, and you don't really want to get caught in between that. So from that perspective, I like to see the Padres trying. I wish some other teams would do the same thing.
No, I find them quite intriguing. Folks, he is Austin Meek of the Register Guard, registerguard.com, ducksports.com, on Twitter, at AustinMeekRG. Austin, always appreciate the check-in, and we shall chat soon.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate
All right. Take care.